Hi, this is Sassy Strawberry, and today I'm going to read an excerpt from Liu Yao, Coins of Destiny by Priest. The book is published by Rosmay Publishing, and I hope you enjoy it. Chapter 1, To Sever All Secular Ties. Erlang, the second son of the Chang family, was noticeably shorter than the average 10-year-old. Under the midday sun, he lugged some firewood from the courtyard into the house, and it took the small boy 2 trips to bring in the entire bundle. Wiping the sweat off his face, he proceeded to start a fire for the stove. The Changs had a visitor, and Erlang's father was busy playing host, leaving all the household chores to his second son. Erlang had to chop wood, stoke the kitchen fire, and make the whole meal by himself, spinning about in his short legs in a whirlwind of activity. The boy could reach the stove, but his pint-sized stature still proved a challenge when he handled the hefty cooking pot, so he fetched a little stool that usually stood in the corner. At the age of 6, Erlang had mastered the skill of cooking while standing on this unstable stool. After nearly tumbling in and turning himself into meat stew on several occasions, he learned the precarious art of balancing on its 4 uneven legs and had lived in harmony with it since. Erlang was adding water to the pot when his brother returned home. Dalang, the Chang family's eldest son, was a strapping young fellow of 15. He entered the house quietly, reeking of toil. After surveying his surroundings, he hoisted his younger brother off the stool before shoving him on the back. "I'll do it," he muttered. "You go play." Of course, Erlang knew better than to run off and relax without a care in the world. He greeted his brother before crouching by the stove in silence to work the bellows for the fire. Dalang glanced down at Erlang. Not a word escaped his lips, yet his eyes brimmed with complex emotions. The Chang's unexpected visitor was a Taoist priest who went by the name Mu Chun. Despite shamelessly introducing himself as a Zhen Ren, his unremarkable appearance contradicted the self-purported credential of an enlightened being. Dalang certainly could not discern the unfettered poise characteristic of an immortal, and might instead peg him as a fortune-telling swindler based on his looks alone. His triangular eyes never seemed to open fully, his scraggly goatee was far from impressive, and beneath his flowing robes was a pair of scrawny legs that did not belong on someone with enough cultivation to be titled Zhenren. This Mu Chun character had shown up at the doorstep last night asking for some water, just in time to catch the 10-year-old Erlang returning home from the private school near the entrance of the village. The school was run by an old man who had repeatedly failed the academy level of the nationwide imperial examinations. Undeterred by his apparent lack of knowledge, this failed scholar continued to tutor the local children. His approach to tuition fees was rather unkind, rejecting offers of cured meats and produce from the local farmers and demanding payment in genuine gold, silver, or copper coins. Worse yet, the amounts were never fixed. After frittering the money away, he would simply turn to his students for more. Needless to say, he was not qualified to impart knowledge and tutor children in the classics, but there were no viable alternatives in the vicinity for these rural families. The Chang family certainly could not afford to send their sons to school, but for some strange reason, Erlang felt drawn to these abstruse and pedantic lectures peppered with archaic literary jargon. Since he could not openly attend lessons, he resorted to frequent eavesdropping. Convinced that every speck of knowledge that accompanied his spittle was the fruit of his painstaking efforts, the ungenerous old tutor often disrupted his lessons to patrol around his house, refusing to allow anyone to listen in for free. Whenever that happened, Erlang had to hide like a monkey in the big pagoda tree in front of the house, working up a sweat in order to learn how an individual's cultivation of self could bring about peace on earth, as per the great learning of Confucius. Thus, drenched in sweat after another free lesson, Erlang fetched a bowl of water for the peculiar visitor, as instructed by his father. However, instead of accepting the water, the Taoist extended a withered hand to gently tilt the boy's chin up. One might have expected him to feel Erlang's bones for divination or some other arcane practice, but all he did was stare into the eyes of the boy who was doing his best imitation of a dour student. Regardless of what the Chunren had glimpsed in Erlang, he nodded enigmatically after his scrutiny and announced to the Cheng family, "I see that this child was born with exceptional aptitude. Perhaps a great destiny awaits him." Dalang witnessed the Junren's proclamation. As an innkeeper's apprentice, he regularly interacted with travelers from all over and considered himself reasonably knowledgeable. Never before had he heard of anyone capable of gauging a person's aptitude with a mere glance. The teenager readied himself to deride this itinerant charlatan's claims. However, before he could voice his objections, he realized that his father had gladly accepted this baseless observation as fact. A wave of horror swept over him as the reality of the situation dawned. The Changs had always grappled with poverty. His mother had given birth to his youngest brother before the new year, complications from labor leaving her bedridden. With this, their family lost a capable worker and gained an ailing invalid who required copious amounts of medicine, straining their already delicate finances. The year's harvest was poor. Months had gone by without a drop of rain, the drought signaling an impending famine. If worse came to worst, the family might not be able to feed the three sons. Dalang knew that his parents had pinned their hopes on him. Having spent a year and a half learning his trade, he still had some years before he could start contributing to the family's finances. Their youngest brother was merely an infant in swaddling clothes, and his parents were naturally loath to part with him. That only left their middle child, the surplus Erlang, if they could sell him, palming him off on this traveling Taoist priest who would guide him in immortal cultivation. It would at least chart him a path for the future. If Erlang could achieve immortality through cultivation, it would be a great blessing for the Cheng family. And if he failed, so be it. Allowing Erlang to leave with someone else would at least afford him the means to survive, be it as a wanderer or con artist. As long as he had enough to eat and grew to adulthood, it would serve as a way out of this current predicament. Very swiftly, Mu Chun and the short-sighted Cheng patriarch struck a deal. The Junren would pay 2 taels of silver to welcome his third and final disciple into his cultivation sect, and the father would hand over the boy the very next afternoon. Erlang would sever all secular ties with his natal family and set off on a journey with his new teacher and custodian, his Shifu. Dalang had never been close to his brother of his, since their age difference left them little to talk about. Nevertheless, Erlang had always been a sensible, well-tempered child who never caused any trouble. The clothes he wore were Dalang's hand-me-downs, and the food he ate were leftovers from his infant brother and ailing mother. The only time that he ever came first was in doing household chores, and he never complained. Dalang never voiced his feelings, but deep down, he sincerely cherished this younger brother of his. Alas, he was powerless. The Changs were too poor to feed all three sons, and Dalang was ill-prepared to shoulder the household responsibilities as the eldest son just yet. His words carried no weight. Still, was he supposed to watch his own flesh and blood being sold off just because times were tough? The more Dalang considered the situation, the more distasteful it felt. He contemplated smacking a dent to that old fraudster's skull with a hefty iron label, but ultimately stopped himself. After all, if he had been so bold of a person, he would have chosen the far more lucrative life of banditry and reveled in the stolen riches rather than working as a mere apprentice and errand boy. Erlang was not entirely in the dark about his parents' intentions or his eldest brother's brooding thoughts. He was by no means precocious, unlike those prodigies who composed poetry at 7 or appointed Grand Chancellor at 13. He was simply an ordinary person, slightly more perceptive than most. His father toiled day and night, and Dalang toiled night and day. His mother had only enough regard for his eldest and youngest sons. Thus, Nobody in the Cheng house cared enough to scold or mistreat Erlang, but it also meant that nobody really cared enough about him, full stop. And Erlang knew it, tactfully going out of his way to avoid being noisy or annoying. The only times he ever stepped out of line were when he climbed the tree to eavesdrop on that failed scholar's incoherent lectures on Confucian values. He saw himself as an errand boy, a farmhand, a servant, always conscientious and diligent, but he was not a son. He did not know what being a son felt like. He supposed a child ought to be talkative and lively, but he knew he didn't have that right, because he was not a son. He grew accustomed to bottling up his words and opinions, and over time, without an outlet, these unspoken thoughts ricocheted inwards. Like a sandy shore battered by relentless rain, the little boy's heart was left with countless holes in its wake. These wounds scabbed over as shrewd little eyes that influenced how he saw the world, revealing to him that his parents had sold him to the Taoists. However, he remained strangely composed upon learning this, as if he had anticipated it all along. Prior to Erlang's departure, his sickly mother left her bed for the first time in a long while, shakily calling him over. Her eyes reddened as she pressed a small bundle into Erlang's hands. Inside were a few changes of clothing altered from Dalang's hand-me-downs, and a dozen pieces of leavened flatbread made by his father overnight. Faced with her 10-year-old son, she could not resist reaching into her sleeves, quivering as she fished out a string of copper coins. The sight of these treasured copper coins, with their pitted and tarnished surfaces, tugged at Erlang's apathetic heartstrings. Like a cub alone and frozen in the snow, he thought his twitching nose had caught the scent of his absent mother. Unfortunately, his father caught sight of the money. One loud cough from him was enough to compel the teary woman to tuck the money away. And just like that, the fleeting scent of his mother evaded capture like an image mirrored in a rippling pond, dispersing with the wind before Erlang could truly savor its presence. "Erlang, come here!" His insipid mother tugged at his hand, leading him into the room. She barely managed two steps before gasping for breath and sank wearily back onto her bed. Gesturing at a small lamp suspended from the ceiling, she asked him in a feeble voice, "Erlang, do you know what this is?" Erlang looked upwards indifferently. "It's the immortal's lamp of eternal flame." Once part of Erlang's great-grandmother's dowry, this unassuming lamp was a treasured family heirloom. Although this palm-sized lamp lacked a wick and lamp oil, the talismanic engravings covering the simple but quaint ebony base enabled it to glow perpetually, illuminating a tiny area. Nevertheless, Erlang could not make sense of it. Try as he might, he could not find a purpose for this shoddy trinket other than attracting bugs in the summer. However, a celestial artifact required no practical utility. As long as it was ornamental enough to impress visiting neighbors and friends, these rural villagers would consider it a precious heirloom worthy of being passed down to future generations. These so-called celestial artifacts bore talismanic charms inscribed by immortals, impossible for ordinary people to replicate. They existed in various forms with diverse uses, such as eternal flame lamps, fireproof paper, climate-adaptive beds, and the list goes on. Immortals were often referred to as cultivators or Taoists, and high-level cultivators might be addressed as Junren. According to legends, they harnessed life energy from nature, communing with heaven and earth during their initiation. As their cultivation deepened, they might achieve anidia, foregoing the need for food, gain preternatural abilities, attain eternal youth, and even ascend to immortality. Despite numerous myths and legends that vividly portrayed immortals, no one had ever laid eyes on one, and good celestial artifacts were almost impossible to come by. Leaning forward, Mrs. Chen cast an earnest gaze upon Erlang. Her tone was gentle, almost ingratiating. Erlang, when you return after your training, you'll also make a lamp of eternal flame for Mother, won't you? Erlang did not reply, merely glancing at her as callous words formed in his mind. You wish. Now that you've sent me away, I won't ever come back. Immortal or not, alive or dead, even if I end up no better than a pig or a dog, you will never see me again. Mrs. Cheng flinched when she realized that her child was unlike either of his parents. Instead, she could almost glimpse the shadow of her elder brother in him. That older sibling had been a stroke of luck for her natal family. Even when he was a child, his features displayed a painterly refinement that set him apart from other farm boys. Their parents had nearly bankrupted themselves to fund his education, and he certainly had not disappointed, passing the academy-level imperial examinations at a tender age of 11 and earning the title of scholar. People believed that these remarkable achievements marked him as an incarnation of the star of literary excellence, descending to earth to be born into her family. Alas, this noble star seemed reluctant to linger in the mortal realm, succumbing to illness before he could undertake the next level of examinations. Mrs. Cheng was very young when her brother passed away. Memories once obscured by time surfaced once more and reminded her that in life, her elder brother's temperament had been the same. Inherently astute with unfathomable thoughts. He faced the world with a simple and indifferent gaze, unaffected by great joy or anger, reining in himself to impassivity. This composure intimidated others, making it difficult to get close to him. She felt herself letting go of Erlang's hand. The boy, as if he had grasped the reason for the distancing, suddenly took a step back. In this meek and silent manner, he brought this final adieu between mother and son to an abrupt end, and he left with the old Taoist. The self-styled Junren looked sleazy, his hat precariously perched atop a stringy, emaciated frame. As he led Erlang by the hand, he resembled nothing more than the leader of a roving theater troupe tugging along his freshest recruit, a young flunky abducted from somewhere. Erlang's childlike exterior belied the maturity of his heart and mind. He padded away for a few steps, but could not resist glancing back over his shoulder. There stood his weeping mother, carrying a broken wicker basket with his youngest brother asleep inside. Tears obscured her features. Beside her, his father stood silently with a bowed head, resembling a desolate, dingy shadow. It was unclear whether he sighed with sorrow or guilt, but he was unwilling to raise his head to look at Erlang. Erlang believed that his actions were not driven by resentment. After all, why should he feel resentful? His parents had blessed him with the gift of life and grace of nurture. Admittedly, they had abandoned that grace midway, but their merits probably compensated for their failings. He stared at his toes as he told himself it was all right if father and mother didn't value him. It was all right that they had sold him to a Taoist priest with triangles for eyes. He was cutting ties with them. All he had to do was see himself as a stubborn rock born of heaven and earth. Erlang looked away, averting his gaze untinted by nostalgia. The long, uncertain road unfolded before him like the endless darkness of the night. As he clutched his Shifu's withered hand, it was as if he held a lamp akin to the Cheng's precious heirloom. Despite the lofty celestial prefix tacked onto his name, its halo of light could barely illuminate a small area below it. Charming as it might be, charm was all it had. There were two approaches to a voyage, traveling to gain experience and fleeing like a fugitive. As Erlang followed the man who had become his shifu through no merit of his own, not only did he have to brave the elements, eating and sleeping in the wilderness, but he also got an earful of the old fellow's twisted reasoning and fallacious beliefs. Describing his experience as a fugitive on the run would have been an understatement. Mu Chun might have proclaimed himself a cultivator of immortality, but Erlang did not believe a word of it, allowing the former's words to enter one ear and exit through the other. This world abounded with individuals with fantastical notions of reaching immortality, resembling nothing more than a shoal of carp swarming across a river. During the reign of the former emperor, sex of all sizes sprouted up on every street and alley like mushrooms after the rain. Families with many offspring flocked to them, leveraging connections to send their youth to these random sects in hope of uncovering the secrets to immortality. However, the children only learned petty circus tricks like smashing boulders against their chests. In this era, pill-refining alchemists outnumbered cooks, and the number of people reciting scriptures surpassed those who tilled the land. For many years, both martial arts and academic studies were neglected, allowing these idle, itinerant charlatans to run amok like feral fowl without the farmer. At the height of this absurdity, there might have been as many as 20 cultivation sects clustered around a single county, like trees around a clearing. One could have easily purchased books with nonsensical mental cultivation methods from street vendors or traveling peddlers and brazenly recruit disciples under the banner of immortal cultivation, fleecing them for their wealth. If all these people had found a way to ascend to the heavens, it remained to be seen if the gates could even accommodate such a throng of nobodies. Even mountain bandits known for raiding and plunder followed suit in causing a ruckus, joining in these deceptive practices. They rebranded the Black Tiger Stronghold to Clear Wind Temple and the Ravenous Wolfgang to Pavilion of the Profound Mind, performing sleight-of-hand tricks such as fishing coins from boiling oil and fire-breathing. Before conducting their heists, they would stage clamorous and chaotic performances to intimidate passersby into making generous donations. An army veteran, the late emperor had been an unrefined sort with an explosive temper. Fearing that the empire would collapse if the common folk continued cultivating this miasma of chaos, he issued an edict demanding the arrest of all these immortals and deities running rampant in the countryside. Whether they were true immortals or false gods, they would all be exiled into penal servitude. Before this earth-shattering edict could exit the palace gates, the upper echelons of the imperial court caught wind of it. Terrified, they scrambled out of their warm beds and assembled in the great hall, lining up in order of seniority for the climactic finale. They stood ready to protest the decree by smashing their heads in turn against the palace pillars in hopes that their monarch might repent, lest he incur the wrath of the immortals and inflict ruin upon the empire. The emperor certainly could not allow his entire court of civil and military officials to become martyrs. Besides, his exquisite pillars carved with dragons would not have survived it. So the old monarch had no choice but to rescind his decree. The next day, he instructed the Imperial Astronomical Bureau to establish an office of celestial precepts under the direct oversight of the Grand Astrologer. After jumping through some hoops, they managed to invite a handful of accomplished cultivators to serve in the committee and mandated that all cultivation sects must undergo verification by this office. Only those issued an iron plaque will be considered certified and allowed to recruit disciples. Enforcing such restrictions across this vast and magnificent empire, spanning 9 administrative provinces with limited north-south connectivity, proved nearly impossible. The imperial court already struggled with addressing issues like robbery and trafficking, let alone overseeing the recruitment practices of immortality sects. The genuine cultivation sects ignored this profane emperor's directives and did as they pleased. And though certain guilty charlatans did show restraint, the impact was marginal. After all, plaques of any kind could be easily forged. Nevertheless, the late emperor's painstaking efforts did bear some fruit. The imperial court's repeated inspections and purges significantly dampened the public's enthusiasm for immortal cultivation. Eventually, the populace realized that they had never witnessed the cultivator finding success, so they reverted to their customary rural activities. Farmers tilled the fields, shepherds tended their flocks, and these lofty daydreams were soon forgotten. By the time the current emperor took the reins, the immortality craze was on its last legs, barely clinging to life once the fever had passed. Recognizing the drawbacks of excessive policing, and acknowledging that not everyone could be law-abiding, the emperor and his officials ignored immortal cultivation fraudsters, only intervening in the case of a formal complaint. Erlang had once heard the old tutor in the village narrate this sequence of events, and in his view, the stick-like figure holding his hand was precisely that, a stick. At best, he might be considered a stick that fed him, but there was nothing particularly worthy of Erlang's respect. The twig-like Mo Chun stroked his quivering little moustache, prattling on. My sect's name is Fu Yao. Do you know what that is? The old tutor had a strong aversion to anything involving deities, ghosts, Buddhism, and Taoism, and categorically refused to discuss them. Erlang, influenced by his first teacher, also shared his disdain for such topics. Alas, since this charlatan was in charge of the food, he had to at least feign interest. Mo Chun raised a finger and a swirling gale arose as if summoned by a supernatural force, whisking the blades of dried grass into an upward spiral. Then a lightning bolt struck the yellowed grass, tracing a sharp, luminous line that nearly dazzled the boy's eyes. Erlang was astounded by the display of supernatural power, and Mu Chun was equally surprised. Swiftly realizing that he had cowed the meek-looking but cold-hearted brat, he discreetly withdrew his hand. Sliding his bony hands into his sleeves, he leisurely began his intellectual showmanship. The great Zhuangzi once wrote, "For the Peng flies southward over the foam. 100 miles, the seas swell like a dome. At every midsummer, the mighty bird alights in the fierce Fu Yao and doth ride. Its estival current 1,000 miles, soaring into the azure and beyond." Transcending the bounds of shape and form, the Peng emerges from the abyss of the sunless northern sea. Casting off its aquatic guise, it unfurls its wings and ascends with the Fu Yao, a great whirlwind, soaring into azure to fulfill its destiny. This is the origin of the name Fu Yao. Do you understand now? Erlang struggled to wrap his head around this, grappling with his awe of unknown forces and his contempt for superstitious beliefs. Eventually, he came to regard his shifu with a curious blend of reverence and disdain, begrudgingly granting Mu Chun a level of respect on par with his family's lousy lamp. The boy managed a baffled nod. "Do you have a proper name?" Mu Chun asked. Erlang lowered his gaze submissively and shook his head. "I see that your aptitude is exceptional, and you have the potential to soar into the azure and dive into abyss. You're not meant to be confined in a mere pond like a fish. You are a flood dragon that will surpass its origins to evolve into a true dragon." Mu Chun wiggled his fingers, busy with calculations. After a moment, as if he had divined the vicissitudes of Erlang's life, he pronounced, "This teacher will bestow upon you the single character of Tian for your given name, so that you may fulfill your true potential. What say you?"
Hi, this is Sassy Strawberry. So I hope you enjoyed the narration of this excerpt from Coins of Destiny, Liu Yao by Priest, translated by myself, and published by Ross May. The first book is estimated to be out in October, November 2024. So if you enjoyed it, go get your own copy. Thank you. Bye-bye.